Okay, we are now recording again. Thank you, Alan. And take it away.
Okay, so welcome everyone to this week's question and answer session. And we've got a whole raft of different topics this week, so let's see how we go. First up, just want to remind everybody, those New Year's resolutions, you should all be subscribing to our announcements list, the newsletter, and the member forum for those of you who are members of the club. And the Google how-to, Google Groups how-to webpage will tell you exactly how to do it. But this week, I'd just like to focus for a couple of minutes on the announcements list. It's called OPCUG-announcements. That's the Google group. It's essentially a list server. So what happens is, usually, it's either Chris or myself sends an email. We send an email message to the list server, one email. The list server then relays that message to everybody who's subscribed. So every week, you'll get some kind of message from us. So generally, you'll get one message every week. It will tell you about the upcoming meeting. It'll either be a monthly meeting like tonight, or next week we'll have a regular Q&A session. There'll be no actual speaker, as it were. And then about an hour before the meeting, I generally send out a reminder message. So most weeks you'll see two messages. Anybody can subscribe to the announcements list. You don't have to be an OPCUG member. The easiest way to do it is to use an email address. And you can use any email address. You can access the announcements on the web, but it kind of defeats the object of having an announcement if you have to go look for it on a web page. So basically, you subscribe to the list, and if you want to send a question or a comment or offer to share something, whatever you want to tell the group, you basically send an email to this email address. And we'll come back to that later on. And this will all be posted on the website tomorrow. So don't think you have to remember all those funny symbols there. And then the list of messages that people send get sent to the email address that you've subscribed to. So that's why we want your email address. Every email message has a unsubscribe link on the bottom of the message. Excuse me. And if you see the little graphic at the bottom there, that's essentially the footer of the email message with the unsubscribe link. So basically what you do is you reply to the mail, or you click on that link, or you send an email to the unsubscribe link there, and that will unsubscribe you. So as I said, you want full details, then go to the Google Groups how-to webpage, and there's the link. Or following on Bridget's fine presentation, you remember that footer she was talking about. If you scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, you will find a link called Google Groups how-to, and that will tell you exactly how to subscribe to the announcements list and how to process any of the Google Group list servers. So I highly recommend all of those groups as being sources of very useful information. Okay, going on to the first question, and the first question will be discussed by Chris.
Yeah, so we had a member who sent in to suggestion box or question, whatever our link is, our email address, suggestion box at opcug.ca, saying that they had gotten a message from Kaspersky, which they were running on their computers, saying that 7-Zip had a critical vulnerability. So the user went to the 7-Zip website and installed the latest version that was available at the website. And Kaspersky reported 7-Zip has a critical vulnerability. And the user, wait, what? And subsequently, the user just uninstalled 7-Zip. figuring that, well, there's something going on here, and I just don't want to have this critical vulnerable software on my computer, and they were looking for a replacement to 7-Zip. So I decided to dig into it a little bit deeper, and I looked on the 7-Zip website, and I found that the latest version is version 19.00, which was actually released February 21 of 2019, like 2 years ago. And I was like, really? 2 years since the most recent release? And I took the, I downloaded the installer for it, and I uploaded it to VirusTotal.com, and VirusTotal.com said that there was no vulnerabilities. I have Vuln Detect installed on my computer, which looks specifically for software that has security vulnerabilities for which a patch is available, and it reported that 7-Zip was okay. And I also have Software Update Monitor on my computer, and I ran it, and it reported that it was okay and that there is no more recent version of 7-Zip that is available. So I would, in this case, I would actually go back, and if I was troubleshooting a situation like this, I would look to see what is the exact message from Kaspersky. Now, the person uninstalled 7-Zip, so we couldn't get this information. I wonder if Kaspersky does an offer to update to a secure version, if they detected a vulnerable version, and if so, I would try that and see what it actually put in its place. I wondered if it actually said what version was installed and see if it actually matched, and in particular, does it actually give the exact path to the insecure version that it found? And I thought, perhaps it's actually looking and found, you know, an old setup file that was lying around from a previous version that it was detecting as insecure or something like that. So those are the sort of thoughts that were going on in my mind on how I would track down what's really happening. Now, I installed the latest version of 7-Zip on my computer after I had done a check at VirusTotal that the install program had no known compromises to it. And then after installing it, I went and I submitted all of the .exe and .dll files to VirusTotal individually, and all of them came back as being not compromised. So I had 0 of 71 antivirus engines detected any problem with any of the installed programs. So sort of at that point, you know, one of the things I wanted to point out is something being vulnerable and something being infected is a different thing. So Vuln Detect looks for security vulnerabilities in software, or software that has known security vulnerabilities. VirusTotal.com looks for infected files as opposed to program files that have security vulnerabilities. So these are mutually, you know, they're not the same thing. So, you know, I looked at it and I said, well, is 7-Zip version 19 infected? Probably not. It's been around for 2 years, and VirusTotal.com is still detecting it as being not infected. So probably not infected. Is it vulnerable? Probably not. Vuln Detect, which tracks programs for security vulnerabilities that are known, and it said there was no vulnerability known in 7-Zip. So in all likelihood, it's not infected, and it's probably not vulnerable. So I would feel okay using 7-Zip. There is a version 20.02 alpha available for those that are brave enough to try alpha-level software. It's almost by definition that you can expect to have some kind of issues with alpha or beta software, but you could try it if you wanted, and you can always uninstall it and go back to the release version if you don't like it. Or you could find another one. So there is the compressed folders built into Windows, which is actually a zip file. When you see something that says it's compressed folders, and when you right-click in a folder and go new, one of the options is to create a compressed folder, which is creating a brand new zip file. You drop files into that compressed folder. Basically, you're just building into a zip file. I use Total Commander, which is a file manager, which has zip capabilities built into it, and zipping and unzipping, and so very easy to work with. Alan uses PZIP and is very happy with that. A couple of the other popular ones out there, WinRAR, HShampoo, and Bandizip. And I came across a link, which is actually quite new. I think it was actually put out late 2020, of a bunch of free WinZip alternatives. And so you can take a look at that. I pasted that into the chat window as well. And subsequent to this, we also find out that it was actually fixed. Kaspersky is no longer calling it vulnerable. And so the user originally ran into this, reinstalled 7-Zip, and Kaspersky is no longer calling it vulnerable. So this is a sort of case in point where you can run into programs that will give you false positives. So they tell you that something is vulnerable or something is compromised or infected, and false positives do happen. So this is a case in point where it did. Good on the person to pay attention to the fact that Kaspersky said there was something wrong. They could well have been right, and so it definitely does deserve extra investigation if you have any of your security software that is flagging problems, but it's not always going to bear out that it really truly was a problem.
Thanks, Chris. Our next question is also came into the suggestion box. I noticed I have a camera icon on the bottom of the desktop and on the Gmail screen. I have new meeting and join a meeting menu options in Gmail. Could anyone be viewing me while I'm using my computer? I've covered my camera as a security measure. And it turns out if you cover your camera, people can't see you. They just see a blank screen, a piece of paper. I don't think that's the problem. It's just these icons and menu things lying around when you don't need them. How can I remove them? So basically, I went into my Gmail, and I found that I too have new meeting and my meetings links on the sidebar of the Gmail program. It's part of a Meet utility, but I never use the Meet utility, so that doesn't really matter. But then while I'm looking at that, I find there's also a Hangout section, which is, I think, their video or part of their video conferencing options, and I never use Hangouts either. So I'm quite happy to get rid of those. So I looked at settings. So if you go to settings, which is the usually the gear icon on things, and if you see my little red circle there, that's the settings icon on the Google screen. And when you click on that, it gives you an option to see all settings. So I clicked on see all settings, and then I get these tabs. So I want the chat and meet. And then when I open up that, I've got some radio buttons there, which turns Hangouts and Meet on and off. So I basically turn them both off, hit the Save Changes button, and bingo. Both Meet and Hangouts have gone away. So we got rid of those. What about the camera icon? I wasn't sure what this looked like, but again, I sometimes have this problem after evenings like this when I close the Zoom conference and there's a camera icon, a Zoom icon essentially, sticks around on the taskbar for some reason. The way to get rid of it is to right-click on it, which will pop up a context menu, and one of the options is Quit Zoom. And if you hit Quit Zoom, then that will remove the camera icon, the Zoom camera icon, from the taskbar. I was playing around the other day in my admin account, and I found that my admin account also has a camera icon on the taskbar. And this one I don't recognize, so I clicked on it, and it loads something called Meet Now and gives me options to meet now or join a meeting. So I clicked on Meet Now because I still don't know what application we're trying to run here. And lo and behold, it runs, or it starts to run, Skype, which I find very interesting because if I run the startup option in Task Manager, I find that I've disabled Skype. So I'm not quite sure how Meet Now loads itself when Skype is disabled. However, it does. So again, right click on the camera icon. This time the option we want says hide. And when we hit the hide icon, then the camera, the hide option in the menu here, the camera icon disappears from the taskbar. So that's how to get rid, clean up some of that junky stuff if you don't really want it lying around. One of the resolutions I gave everybody at the end of December was to share things like smart apps for Android phones and tablets. And I also pointed out it can be a program for your PC, hint, hint. And Stuart took us up on that and sent us this share of an Android app called WeNet, which is a network utility suite for Android devices. It says it's a powerful and comprehensive network utility suite and has all kinds of network tools and security checkers and that kind of thing. So if you want that kind of feature, Stuart has this on his wish list, he says. I don't think he's actually used it yet. But if you're interested in that, then that's an option you can certainly think about doing. My next question is back to Windows, and I forget who it was now that has a problem where Windows is updating, but it's doing it all the time. He's been receiving updates almost every second day since mid-December. It's taking between 10 minutes and an hour and a half. And the time between the updates is now getting shorter. Now it's down to like every 12 hours, so twice a day. And the updates, of course, are coming when he's trying to do things online and slowing or stopping things happening. He wants to know, is anybody else experiencing this? So if you're seeing any problems like this, let us know in the chat window. And how can I overcome it and get back to some form of normality? So he asked me to post this on the user forum, so I did, and Stuart replied, and he didn't have a fix, but he said, until you can identify the cause of the update loop, maybe you could disconnect the laptop, I guess it is, from the internet, so that would stop Windows downloading things. And it turns out that's not a great solution for the individual because he really needs the web to be able to get things done. So my thought was, why not tell Windows that your internet is using a metered connection? And when Windows sees a metered connection, then it won't download updates generally because it may blow away your data cap and start costing you money for overage charges. So you still have access to the internet, but Windows won't download most updates. It will still download what it says are critical updates, but most of the time you will be able to control the updates that you want to receive. The concern here is that you're also turning off updates to Windows Defender, for example, if you're using the Windows antivirus software. So you really need to turn that on, and you can do that manually just by running the Windows security program and updating Defender manually. But really, this is for this user, it's just a temporary solution until he can find a problem. So Chris has a bunch of suggestions.
A couple of suggestions. There is a Windows Update Troubleshooter. So if you go to the Windows Setting app and you search on Troubleshooter, you will get to the right place, and or you can dig down into update security and updates, and then on the Windows update page, there's a troubleshooter. And that is surprisingly effective in a lot of the problems that Windows update will have. So it will go through and it'll try to reset a number of components that may have gotten out of kilter, and that can often work. In this case, it didn't. Microsoft does have a relevant support page on problems with Windows Update, and I've pasted the URL into the chat window as well. And Bleeping Computers had some ideas as well. So there are some other ways that are a little bit more drastic than what Windows Update Troubleshooter will actually do in terms of resetting Windows Update. So you could always go through that. It's not terribly difficult. It's just you have to stop a couple of services, delete some folders, and then restart services, and then run the update, run Windows Update. So I've actually done that in the past before they had the Windows Update Troubleshooter and had some success with that. When you're searching on things like, in particular, things like, you know, how to fix Windows Update problems, be a little bit careful about just doing web searches and finding information. If you find advice from a web page that was written in 2016, I would stay far away from that, because Windows Update has been modified over the years multiple times. And so I would look for things that, you know, pretty current information and a website that seems to be trustworthy. So for something like this, I wouldn't look at any information that is more than, you know, 6 to 9 months old for sure. And I would try to stay with things that, you know, are within the last 3 to 6 months. For the most part.
I just echo the thought about Windows Troubleshooter. I'm not a big fan of Microsoft Troubleshooters. Generally, they don't troubleshoot anything. But Windows Update Troubleshooter has actually solved the problem for me one time where an update got stuck, and the troubleshooter basically released it and got things working again. So sometimes that does work. Anyway, Joss, carrying on.
Yeah, Joss had a comment before we go on. Joss had a comment in the chat window about on the Windows Update screen, there's an option to change the active time. And that does not, as Joss noted, prevent updates when you're busy. What it does is it prevents a reboot from occurring during your active hours. It doesn't prevent the updates actually going in on your computer, just preventing the reboot that is often required. And you can only set, I believe it's 18-hour period is the maximum you can set as active period. So you can end up with it being updated on your system anyways.
And That is a concern too.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, Windows Update, the active time.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, sorry.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt that Microsoft, in its infinite wisdom, doesn't allow those that are really knowledgeable to turn it off. I understand where they're coming from. They want the average person out there to make sure that, in particular, security updates do get applied on systems. But it would be nice if they provided a supported way that people who really know what they're doing could actually turn it off and selectively get updates when they want them. But that's not about to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, the problem, Chris, was that it wouldn't have helped this particular user, because the problem wasn't that his computer was continually rebooting. It was it kept re-downloading updates or...
Yeah. But if you did have the option to say, well, you know, don't send me updates until I call for them, then potentially it could have helped them out. So,
yeah, switch to that.
Yeah. Now, there is another interesting thing. I came across this, and I wrote an article for the newsletter, so it probably will be coming out pretty soon, getting help from Microsoft. If you go on, for example, the Windows Update page, you'll see an option there for Get Help. Mm-hmm. And if you click on that, it'll actually load up to a place where you can it'll go through a whole bunch of other questions first. What's your problem? Tell us what your issue is, and here's some suggested fixes. And after a while, if you keep being persistent, saying that, no, that hasn't fixed my problem, eventually you get an option to connect to a real person. And so you can actually have them call you back. If there's nobody available at the time, you can actually put in a phone number and somebody will call you. Or you can stay online and do an online chat when somebody is freed up. And so I highly encourage people that are having particular problems like this, and you can't, you know, you do what you can, but hey, this is Microsoft's program. So get help from them on how to fix this particular problem. And so go through that. You will get connected to a person, and they are very helpful people. They really do want to have you back up and running in a stable, reliable version of Windows. So as well, look for that article, Getting Help from Microsoft. So it should be coming out soon. I submitted it back in October. So within the next couple of months, I suspect that it will be in the newsletter.
I think Stuart might have a comment.
Yes. Going back to my suggestion of disconnecting his PC from the internet, the WAN, this would stop him from downloading the update repetitively. And I know that the person needs access to the internet, but he was able to post the message on our forum using another machine or device of some sort. So if he disconnected the problematic laptop, he could use the problematic laptop off the internet, transfer the data to the whatever device he was using. Rock on.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
And do whatever it was they were trying to do. Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a kind of a roundabout way of doing it.
It's a workaround. It's a hack.
Yeah.
And Mark has a comment here. He says possibly it's a problem with free disk space. He's saying try to get it to do one update at a time and have it install and finish. Can you do it one update at a time?
You can usually manually apply particular updates. There is a website you can go to, but there is the big omnibus type updates that come out each month that are pretty huge usually, and you can't break them down. But you can do individual ones where it's like .NET updates and stuff like that. You can do those individually, but if you're that tight on space on your drive, I would strongly suspect that you have more fundamental issues with your computer. You should never be running with low enough space on your drive that would be causing the problem, I would think.
So the user did actually run Troubleshooter, and it said that it had detected Windows update issues. And then when you scroll down further down on the screen, one of the things it says is there's a problem with the Bits service. And if you go to the web and try and find out how to fix problems with the Bits service, you find out that one of the solutions is to run the Bits troubleshooter. And I'm wondering whether if you run the Bits troubleshooter, it will tell you to run the Windows update troubleshooter. And you could go round and round forever.
No, this would not be circular. Bits is it's the mechanism that Windows Update uses to actually download the update files. So it is that background transfer service. So it'll step aside if something more important is going on. It'll dribble drabble things out. It can be interrupted and pick up where it left off and things like that. So the BIT service is not dependent on Windows Update. It is the other way around. Windows Update definitely is dependent upon having a working BITS in place. So if this was the problem, then certainly, yeah, you're running the troubleshooter on BITS. If that solved a problem with BITS, that may be where the problem actually lay with Windows Update.
Yeah, and this is from one of those kind of bleeping computer type websites with a whole raft of different search suggestions. So yeah. They're worth trying some of these things for sure. So Chris has a share next.
Yeah, so this was, I saw this from Paul Thurrott today on Twitter. He's a Windows guru, and he had a tweet he put up. His wife said to him, I was using my computer and it died. Can you look at it? And he said, sure. And he claims, I have no idea how to fix hardware problems. So he pressed the power button. Nothing happened. Plugged it in. Leave it there. 2 hours pass. Press the power button. It turns on. Yes, I am a hero. Sometimes troubleshooting can be rather simple. So just a little bit of a chuckle there for today.
The Josh is saying he had a stubborn update one time, and following the troubleshooter, I got connected to a real Microsoft person. They took control of the computer and finally managed to fix it by reinstalling the whole Windows 10. Wow. It must have been an exciting remote control session.
Yeah.
And Mark says it's always a good idea to run an occasional disk cleanup to get rid of old temporary files and stuff like that. Yes, it is, Mark.
Yeah, it is, but in this case, it probably wouldn't make any difference because the Windows Update service never goes anywhere near the temp directory. It has its own directory structure under the Windows directory that it uses, and it's got a database of what's been applied on your system and what files have been changed and all kinds of things. So, yes, it's great to clean out old temp files and stuff like that, browser caches, everything like that, but in this case, it wouldn't have made any difference.
Okay, our next question is to do with WhatsApp. The user found that WhatsApp has recently changed its terms and policies and believes they're very intrusive in terms of their personal information. A notice popped up on the cell phone, but the only option was to accept so they could continue working. How dangerous is it to accept these policies, and can I do anything to revert back to the original? She says, I've also heard of the Signal app. What is it, and is it a good replacement for WhatsApp? So it turns out WhatsApp has posted the new terms and conditions on their website, and in fact they include information on the recent changes. So if you go to this legal updates URL, you'll find all the information there about the various terms, policies, conditions. The key updates, if you read them, information on how we handle your data, how we process the data, commitment to privacy, how we process the data for safety, security, integrity, better communication with businesses, better manage their communications with you, making it easier to connect to Facebook and Facebook families and products. That's a scary thought for some of us. The problem is, of course, that sounds wonderful, but really you have to read the information and you have to decide for yourself if you can live with the terms and conditions, because there's no way back. They set their terms and conditions, and if you want to use their product, then you have to agree to those. In terms of Signal, there is a website, signal.org, which will tell you all about Signal. Signal is an independent, non-profit organization. The product is free for anybody to use. They say the development is supported by grants and donations. You can share text, voice messages, photos, videos, and files. Basically the same kind of services that you get from WhatsApp. It has state-of-the-art end-to-end encryption, which also is a feature of WhatsApp. And theirs is powered by an open-source product called Signal Protocol, which apparently is quite well used across the industry. And because it's everything's encrypted, they say we can't read your messages, listen to your calls, and neither can anyone else. And there are no adverts, no affiliate marketers, and no, quote, creepy tracking. So good. And guess what? Signal has terms and conditions and policies, which you have to read to figure out what's going on. However, they also have some people endorsing them. And if you believe the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, he trusts it because it's well built and it's open source and peer reviewed and all those wonderful things. And another person that we know about, know nothing about, but know about, is Edward Snowden. He uses Signal every day, he says. And another security consultant that Chris sometimes quotes, Bruce Schneier, he's impressed with the thought and care, security, and it's his first choice for an encrypted conversation. So there you go. of course, the difficulty with switching to Signal is that these platforms don't talk to each other. So if you want to use Signal, everybody that you want to talk to, have a video conference with, share images, text messages, they also have to be using Signal. So that's one of the problems of moving away from WhatsApp. All your contacts need to move as well, or you can't contact them anymore. And we're at that time of night, we're 9:36. We've got lots of time, actually. Any other questions, comments, or shares?
We have a question from Mike. Linux Ubuntu advice needed. So it comes to the right place. Alan has used Ubuntu. I'm running Ubuntu 18. Ubuntu 20 is now available. Should I upgrade? How will it handle existing applications installed? I'll back up in full, mirror the entire drive to another as precaution. Any thoughts?
Yeah, you should update. I once tried to update from one version to the next, and it seemed as though it was going to take forever. So I have always done a fresh install, and I have a maintenance file, just a maintenance document which tells me which apps I need to install, which configuration items I need to tweak. And I just do a completely fresh install and then go through my list of things to do and bring the thing back to where it was. My data files are all on a separate data partition, so they're not touched because I only refresh the operating system partition. Because I use a disk image thing, of course, in case things go south, so I can always restore back to the original. But that's what I do. Clearly, they have an update procedure, so it must work, but I never found it very useful.
Okay, Eldon has a message here. It was a direct message to me, but I'll relay it forward because... yeah, I think it's relevant. He asked a while ago if anybody had any experience with a piece of software called Restoro. He's dealing with trouble, which said I was missing some DLL software when I was trying to run a program. Google suggested Restoro. Looked before jumping, found only good reports from what looked like credible sources, so he jumped. Takes you to a center I believe is in Manila. Long and short was Restoro was reputed to be good stuff to fix a DLL issue. After they did their thing, I still had the DLL issue. They offered to send me additional expert who could help me for a fee. I bailed. Typically what I would look for, if you're getting an error message about DLL problem or missing when you're trying to run a piece of software, is reinstall that software. Because almost certainly, if it's dependent on a piece of a DLL that is part of the program, that will reinstall that particular DLL. Or potentially, if it's a DLL within Windows that is missing, it's probably not likely if it was just one program that's complaining about the fact that it had a problem with that. So I think that's the most likely solution, is to actually just reinstall the software. And we had a comment from Bill. Elon Musk tweeted about Signal. It was misinterpreted by many. and the shares of some other non-related company went up. Yeah, you got to be a little bit careful when you have somebody tweet about a particular thing. If it's not supported by many other people, who knows if it's true or not. Mark Kaye mentioned next month is the AGM. Yes, we will have information in the upcoming newsletter about the AGM next month. It'll be at the start of the general meeting. And that's all I see in the comments on that. So if there's anybody else who has comment or question, you can unmute yourself or paste it into the chat.
I've got a little question.
Yep.
A little annoyance. I don't know how to do that. On the notification, every so often I get that there is a Java update. And it says click here to update. But no matter where I click on that thing, message, nothing happened. It just closed and it disappeared and nothing gets updated. So I don't know what to do.
I would actually just go to java.com and install the latest Java.
Well, why the notification says click here to update and nothing happens? Am I the only one who sees that? Or?
I've normally been able to update by clicking on the link. But I tend to recommend to most people that rather than clicking in a pop-up box, just go to the known good source for it anyways and install it from there. But that's a little bit overly paranoid, I think, because if you get a pop-up on your screen, if it's not generated as part of a web browser session or something like that, then you've already got code running on your computer that is popping up that box. So if it's malicious, they can already do bad things. So I think it's a little bit overly paranoid. So that's why I'll go ahead and click on the box. But I personally have never run into that. Has anybody else run into that where the Java update notification doesn't let you click on it?
It does appear on the notification on the right side that is controlled by Windows. So it's not
I see. Okay, so it's not a separate because I've always seen Java update notifications come in as a separate pop-up, not part of the notification center in Windows.
That's really odd. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it is odd, but I think long and short is I would just go to java.com and do the update there. Should actually solve the problem, I would think. Anybody else got input to that? I hear deafening silence. So that's what I would try.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, shares? Okay. I guess we're done for the evening then. So thanks very much, folks. And we will see you next week at Q&A. And keep in mind that, yes, indeed, the annual general meeting will be at the February meeting. Second Wednesday in February. So thanks for coming out, folks, and I will stop the recording.